Good morning and welcome to another edition of Living Better in San Diego, a public service presentation of the Entercom San Diego radio stations. I'm Gary Lee. For years now, Sharp Healthcare and Sharp Mesa Vista Hospital have been a source of hope for San Diegans facing drug and alcohol addiction. Their highly trained medical team has the expertise and the commitment to guide patients and their loved ones towards recovery and to break free from the addiction cycle. Joining us this morning is Sharp Mesa Vista Hospital Medical Director of Outpatient Services, Dr. Fadi Nicholas. Welcome, Fadi.
Thank you, Gary. Good morning.
Nice to have you on the show this morning. We had a rep from Sharp Mesa Vista Hospital on not too long ago, but for anyone who may have missed that show or doesn't know anything about Sharp Mesa Vista Hospital, how about a little background information?
So Sharp Mesa Vista Hospital has been serving the San Diego community for more than five decades. It's a 150-bed psychiatric hospital. We also treat substance abuse patients. We have several outpatient programs. We have child and adolescent programs. We have a senior program. We have trauma program, we have an eating disorder program, and then a different variety of addiction services. So we serve children, adults, and seniors who have psychiatric or substance abuse problems or both.
And where are you guys located?
We are located on 7850 Vista Hill Avenue.
Okay, and how long have you been there?
I've been there since 2004.
Okay, so you've been there a while.
Yes.
And always medical director of outpatient services?
No, I became the medical director recently.
And all these services of yours, they fall under the umbrella of Sharp Healthcare, correct?
Yes.
I was always under the impression that Sharp, and a lot of people probably, Sharp Mesa Vista Hospital was just for mental health issues. But again, as you mentioned, it's a wide range.
No, we have a wide range of programs, and we're focusing more and more on substance abuse problems.
Now, before we get to substance abuse programs that you have at Sharp Mesa Vista Hospital, what mental health services do you provide at Sharp Mesa Vista Hospital?
So we have the whole spectrum. We have inpatient treatment. We have even several levels of inpatient treatments. And we have substance abuse inpatient rehab. And then on the outpatient side, we have programs that are focused. Some programs are focused on cognitive behavioral therapy. Some programs are focused on eating disorder problems. Some programs are focused on child and adolescent issues. So we try to match the patient to the right level of care and the right program depending on what are their needs at that time.
Okay, and I think I saw on your website, aside from eating disorders, also another thing is dual diagnosis disorders. What are those?
So dual diagnosis programs are programs that are addressing both psychiatric problems, depression, anxiety, bipolar disorder, in addition to substance abuse problems, so alcoholism, drug addiction. So typically these are people who have both issues and they need to address both at the same time.
Do you find a lot of that, that those two are tied together?
Yes, it's very common. Sometimes psychiatric disorders trigger the person to go towards alcohol and drugs, and sometimes the opposite. Drugs and alcohol can trigger depression and anxiety in people.
Okay, and when you talk about substance abuse, then we are talking about drugs and alcohol.
Yes.
Now you have the substance abuse programs, treatment programs at Sharp Mesa Vista Hospital, also at your other facility, that's the Sharp McDonald Center. Tell us about that place.
So Sharp McDonald Center is a sister hospital, is specifically for substance abuse problems. We have an inpatient level of care where we detox people, and sometimes we have them stay a little bit longer for rehabilitation, a few weeks, sometimes a month. And then we have a step-down program. It's a partial hospital program where after they finish the inpatient level of care, they step down to the partial hospital. They continue the programming that we're doing in the inpatient side, but they can go home at the end of the day and come back the next day. And then the third level down from that is an intensive outpatient program where they come in three times a week, 3 hours each time, and they go home.
So both facilities do inpatient and outpatient?
Yes.
Okay, so let's talk about substance abuse. That's a big thing. Especially going on right now with the opioid problem.
Yes.
And we've talked about this on the show before several times. Why is this such a big problem now?
Substance abuse problems is becoming more and more evident. We're seeing it more and more people. Unfortunately, it's hitting people at a younger and younger age. It has all kinds of medical ramifications. It has all kinds of psycho and social ramifications. It affects people at the beginning of their lives and affects their future right off the bat. We are seeing more and more of the opiate problems for the last couple of decades, and we can go into detail in that. But I wanted to talk a little bit more about the biology of addiction.
Okay.
So in our brains, there are certain parts that are logical. Hopefully most of us use them.
Yeah.
And there are parts of our brain that are not logical. They're the emotional part. They're the deeper part, pleasure-driven. And typically, you have the logical part of the brain in control of the emotional part of the brain. In addiction, this reverses. So the alcohol or the drug with repeated exposure takes over that emotional part of the brain and makes it the part in control. And with repeated use, the changes in the brain become more and more irreversible. Eventually, you reach a point where the brain is so different that you have, in order to get better, you have to understand now that your brain is different. You have to understand that the emotional part is in control and learn how to work around it. And sometimes you need a lot of people around you, like a group, AA, to lend you their brains, so to speak, to help you get back into that control again. But the changes that happen are always there. And any time you reintroduce a drug, that dynamic will get recreated.
Hmm.
And that's part of the difficulty of treating addiction.
Is that why it's so hard to get clean?
Exactly. Exactly. Because in a way, you have to stop trusting your brain. We're all used to trusting our brain, and now all of a sudden we're telling you, you cannot trust your brain anymore. You have to trust all these people around you in the group or your counselor or your family, but don't trust your own brain. And that's why it's so difficult. But when people do that and listen to people around them, family, friends, AA group, peers, and they go through the process, they regain that control and they can regain back their life. But it's a challenge.
Yeah, see, I'm sober now 32 years, and I didn't go through any program.
Yes.
But I had a great support system. I actually went to a psychologist, and he helped me work through everything.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that. So a certain percentage of people recognize the problem on their own, and they can actually stop on their own. So this is like maybe 20, 25% of people who have a problem. We know that if they recognize it at a young age and they're able to use the resources around them, they can do it. Not everybody's going to need our services.
Right.
But there's also a larger segment of the population who have a problem. They're going to need some help. And those are the people we're trying to address. Only 1 in 10 people in the U.S. who have addiction problems get the treatment they need. And that's a frightening statistic.
Yeah. Now, are you seeing a – you mentioned that over the last several years we've been seeing an increase in the opioid problem. What are you seeing at your facilities? Is it still climbing?
So the problem with opiates started around 1996. OxyContin was introduced. There was a big push in the medical community to start using pain medicine, more powerful pain medications, and the idea was that nobody should be in pain. Now, in retrospect, we know that we need to differentiate between acute pain and chronic pain. Acute pain is when you break a bone, and we obviously need to treat that. But a chronic pain, we know now that opiates actually make it worse. But anyway, over the last few years, since 1996, a lot of people were put on OxyContin. Eventually, when doctors and law enforcement realized the difficulty with this problem, OxyContin use started to decrease. People who are addicted to the opiates started switching to heroin because it's cheaper and more available than the OxyContin. Now what we're seeing is another trend upwards because people are now using fentanyl, which is a very powerful opiate. In our area, for example, people have access to the border. They cross the border and they can get opiates more readily. So we have an additional issue compared to other parts of the country. So, yeah, it is a problem. It started out, we were seeing it a lot in young kids who would raid mom and dad's medication closet and get the medications from there and then switch to heroin. And now I see these patients 10 years later and now they're full-blown heroin addicts.
Hmm.
So it's a very sad reality.
And what's the difference between this situation that we have now with opioids than, say, back in the 60s or 70s, like with, you know, the other drug problems we had, like with acid, LSD, or even heroin back then?
Well, I think the purity of the pharmaceutical compounds and the availability of them, because, you know, there are people who legitimately need pain medicine and they are prescribed those medications. So we have those meds on the market. They're purer. They're made by professional pharmaceutical companies. They're not made by, you know, mom and pop meth labs.
Right.
So, yeah, I think the availability is making it a lot harder to control this problem.
And I think, like you say, especially for where we're located, you've got the border.
Right.
You can go down there and get it a heck of a lot cheaper.
Exactly.
So how do these substance abuse treatment programs that you have at Sharp Mesa Vista Hospital and Sharp McDonald Center, how do they work?
So we use a multi-modality approach. We rely on AA and the wisdom of AA. We also rely on cognitive behavioral therapy. We rely on a lot of things that have been researched and replicated. It's evidence-based. And we rely also on medications that are FDA approved to help people go through the detox part and then go through the initial part of the rehabilitation, which is the most difficult part, and then kind of set them on the right track to stay clean and sober.
Are these programs that you have at your facilities much different than others in the county?
I think they're different in the sense that we implement more rigorous research in our approach. So, for example, after patients leave, we follow up with them at 30-day point, at 6 months point. We try to see if a case does not succeed, what's going on. We're trying to use scientific methods to see why are we succeeding and not succeeding in some cases. If a particular segment of the patient's leaving against medical advice early, we try to monitor that and we try to learn from our mistakes, so to speak. We're also using FDA-approved medications. We're trying to focus on the science part of it, not on some person's approach that they developed and they own. This is medical knowledge, so to speak.
And the difference between what you do at Sharp Mesa Vista Hospital and what you do at Sharp McDonald Center? I think you mentioned earlier that there are some differences.
There are some differences. So Sharp McDonald Center, because it's a substance abuse program, patients call in or family members call in, make an appointment. It could be a day or two later. They come in, they get assessed. So there is a little bit of a wait process to it. There is the extended rehabilitation part of the McDonald Center. There's the PHP, the Partial Hospital Program, part of the McDonald Center. And Mesa Vista is the opposite of that, where we have a hospital open 24/7, so anybody can just walk in. Or our hospitals, our Sharp Hospital emergency rooms, if a patient shows up at the emergency room and they need help, they can refer them and they come in at any time. So there's that difference. We do not have an extended rehabilitation program for the most part at Mesa Vista, and we do not have the partial hospital program at Mesa Vista. So there are some differences. You know, the patient doesn't need to trouble themselves with knowing the difference. They can reach us at any point, and we will match them to the right program.
I see. So if they contact you, they don't have to worry about, hey, I want to go to this one or that
exactly.
one. You take care
exactly.
of that. You decide where they go.
Well, I mean, we'll discuss it with them, but we will tell them what the difference between every program.
And which is better for them.
Right.
Okay, so people don't need to be referred to you?
No, they can self-refer.
Okay.
They don't need a primary care referral or anybody's referral. They can just walk in to Mesa Vista. To the McDonald Center, they just need to make a phone call.
That simple?
That's simple.
Can you take us through a little more of the process?
Yeah.
With these programs? From the moment they call you and say that there's a problem?
Sure. So that when they call, initially they will be in contact with a counselor who will get a brief history. It's usually either a nurse or a therapist. They'll get a brief history. First, we want to make sure the person is safe. So if they're having suicidal thoughts or homicidal thoughts, we might recommend inpatient hospitalization first. But if somebody is not in an immediate risk, then we'll assess, do they need detoxification or not? If they need to detoxification, we'll try to decide, do they need an outpatient detoxification or inpatient detoxification? Let's say the person does not need detoxification, they just need ongoing treatment, then we'll help them on the phone or we'll have them come in for an interview. We sit down with them, we get more detailed history about previous treatments, what kind of psychiatric issues, what kind of medical issues they're dealing with. Because that's another piece I didn't mention. At Mesa Vista, for example, we're more comfortable treating somebody who has diabetes and more medical problems than the McDonald Center. So we'll assess all these things and we'll decide with the patient what's the right level of care. Let's say they did multiple outpatient programs and they have not been successful for a long period of time. Maybe an inpatient rehab program is what they need. Or this is their first treatment ever. Maybe we'll start them on an outpatient level of care. That type of dialogue will happen with the patient and then we'll go from there.
Are there any Any traits or personalities that that are more prone to addiction?
So there's definitely a genetic component. So 40% of the reasons for addiction is genetic. But not everybody who has the genetics for addiction will develop the addiction. So patients who had early exposure, repeated exposure, patients who had trauma in their lives are more prone to addiction. For example, veterans who have been in active combat, who have PTSD, are more prone to developing alcoholism than an average person. People who have mental illness, people who are very type A, you know, very obsessive, sometimes they kind of rely on the substances to calm themselves down. So, yes, there are some traits, but these are the things we usually monitor for, the trauma, mental illness, and things like that.
Trying to see where I fit in there.
I know.
You can see the wheel spinning here. Well, let's talk about, you have a new program now at Sharp MacDonald, at the Sharp MacDonald Center, and that is your Medication-Assisted Treatment Program, or MAT. Tell us about that.
So the MAT program is a new intensive outpatient program. It's three times a week, and each time is 3 hours. It is designed to help people on an outpatient level of care, again, using all these resources that I mentioned before, the cognitive behavioral therapy, 12 steps, motivational interviewing therapies. But we're also going to put a lot of emphasis on what medications they need, if any. And this is not just for opiate patients, because other MAT programs might be more focused on Suboxone or opiate medications. We're trying to address patients who have addiction to alcohol and patients who have addiction to opiates. So, for example, if a patient has a lot of cravings, we might use anti-craving medications. If a patient needs a deterrent, we might use Anabuse. If a patient needs a long-acting anti-craving medication, there are injections that we can give them. If a patient needs outpatient detox from opiates, we can do that. We don't need to hospitalize them if they're detoxing only from opiates. We can use medication like Suboxone to detox them gradually over a period of a few days on an outpatient basis. So we have more focus on the physician piece in this program in addition to all the other services we can provide.
So how long is this program? How long is this? When did it start?
2 weeks ago.
Okay. So that new.
Yes.
Okay. And are there other similar programs like that here in San Diego?
To my knowledge, there might be one or two MAT-specific programs. There are a lot of intensive outpatient programs. They do partly what we do. We have our own outpatient programs that do some of what we do. We're just trying to kind of focus all these resources together, like I said.
So medications to suppress the craving, huh?
Yes.
Is this totally new, a new way of approaching things?
No, the medication for cravings are not very new. They're FDA approved. They work on the craving centers in the brain. They work for alcohol and opiates. They're not new. The injectable part of it is newer. So once a month injection as opposed to once a day pill is probably newer than the actual pill.
So is that the big difference then between this program and your other substance abuse treatment programs?
That and the, again, the actual therapy itself, the CBT therapy, the motivational interviewing-based therapy, and the 12-step-based therapy, and the whole philosophy of the program.
What should loved ones or friends look for to see if maybe somebody that in their life is having a substance abuse problem?
So typically what we want to educate family members or friends, if they're looking at the person, how is the substance affecting their lives? Are they unable to stop? Have we asked them to stop or educated them on how the substances are affecting their lives and they have not been able to stop? Have they been having a lot of cravings? Have they been hiding the bottle and doing all kinds of behaviors to sustain their addiction behind everybody else's back? Are they driving while they're intoxicated? Are they putting themselves and others in dangerous situations? Do they have withdrawal symptoms? If they stop drinking after a few days, do they start shaking? Do they have seizures? Those are the things I think loved ones should pay attention to. And if they see more of these symptoms, that's when they need to seek help.
Okay, so it's kind of hard then to tell when it's really serious enough to seek help.
I'm glad you said that. So the way the field now, let's say alcoholism, the way the field now sees it is that it's a spectrum. Not everybody who drinks alcohol is an alcoholic. There is what we call at-risk behavior. So if somebody is drinking more and more, they're putting themselves at a risk of developing alcohol use disorder. For example, for men, if somebody drinks more than 4 drinks on a particular day and more than 14 drinks per week, this is somebody we call in our field at-risk behavior. For women, it's 3 drinks on a single day and more than 7 drinks a week. That's at-risk behavior. Doesn't mean they're an alcoholic, but this is kind of an alarm to family members or to other people around them, like, hey, there might be an issue here going on. We need to help them cut down. Not everybody needs to go through a program, like I mentioned before. Sometimes just self-control, talking to your primary care doctor, talking to a therapist, and just being aware of what you're doing and cutting back will work for a lot of people. Not everybody needs to come in to detox and rehab and all that. But if somebody repeatedly kept trying and trying and are not successful, or they're doing dangerous stuff now, or there's a risk of seizures, or, you know, they're putting them, that's when you want to kind of time out. We need to get treatment.
Yeah, that's, I always wondered about that, because, I mean, there's no way to diagnose that you're an alcoholic.
I mean, we do have criteria. So the field has criteria, and if you have enough of these criteria, yes, we can diagnose it. There's no test like a blood test,
right?
But there are behaviors and things that the person is
that
doing
you look at.
That tells you that this person drinking is a lot more than the average person.
Yeah, see, I was never diagnosed.
Right, went
to see anybody about it, but I just figured I'm drinking every day,
right?
And I feel like I have to drink every day,
right?
So I figured, okay, and plus my doctor said you need to.
Exactly, and that's great. That's perfect. I mean, you did all the right things. You talked to your doctor, and you said you spoke to a counselor. You were self-aware about your behavior, and you stopped. That's
amazing.
Yeah,
it was actually my doctor said, he said, if you don't change your ways, in 10 years you're checking out. So I said, okay.
Yeah.
I think that was my wake-up call.
And that's perfect. I mean, like I said, 25 to 30% of people are able to do this on their own, and that's great.
And so what can people do for loved ones aside from sitting them down and saying, hey, it's time to get some help? Is there anything else that they can do if they notice something?
So one thing I tell families, that nobody comes in 100% convinced from the first moment that they have a problem. Just if you can just have a little bit of convincing, if you say, hey, why don't you come in and talk to a therapist, or, you know, try gradually to increase awareness as opposed to, like, wait until 100% convinced, because sometimes it might be too late. So just with partial convincing, if you can bring him over, we can kind of take it from there.
I see.
And with time, people, I'm always amazed, and I speak to somebody the first day and their awareness changes. Every day they're away from the alcohol or the drugs, their awareness and their insight improve dramatically. So
what kind of success rate do you have over there?
So we, like I said, we contact people 30 days later and 6 months later, and we are averaging around 70%, which
that's good.
Which is good.
Yeah. Any advice before we wrap up? Any advice for somebody listening this morning that might have a problem or think they have a problem or, again, a loved one?
The biggest issue is not let the shame and embarrassment about this problem prevent you from taking care of yourself or taking care of your loved one. Bring it to the open. Take care of it before it's too late.
And I think that's a part of it, too, the stigma of being an alcoholic or a drug addict. In other shows that I've done where we've talked about this, it's an illness.
Yes.
And it's not something that's chosen.
Yes. And like I said, the changes that happen in the brain tells us it's an illness. It's a lot like diabetes. Your pancreas cannot make insulin. Same thing. Now your emotional part of your brain is in control.
Oh, great. Fadi, thank you so much for being on the show today. Thank you for your insight into this, what's now a major problem in our country.
Thank you so much for having us.
And I appreciate you all that you do at Sharp Mesa Vista Hospital.
Thank you very much.
That concludes another edition of Living Better in San Diego. The opinions expressed on Living Better in San Diego do not necessarily reflect the opinions and views of the staff and management of the Entercom San Diego radio stations. Episodes of Living Better in San Diego are available on this station's website. Join me next week when my guest will be from the El Cajon Boulevard Business Improvement Association. Until then, I'm Gary Lee. Have a great week.